is Ask an Atheist with me, actually me. No, no joke this time. I'm back for real. I am back from the... I have come down the mountain. I have seen all the nations of the earth that I have come to you to visit. No, none of that. My sojourn is over. I had a very, very nice time hanging out with Paul up in the mountain. And we are at the Camp Quest National Summit for 2019. How you doing today? Are you wondering, has Sam actually traveled? No. Much like a bottle-conditioned beer, I may be magnificent, but I do not travel well. And I might explode. So, yeah. So we are in Renton, Washington, not too far from the house. And joining me today is Becky. How are you?
I am fantastic today.
Are you prepared for the summoning?
I suppose I'm prepared for the summoning.
The summoning is happening.
The summoning's happening?
Yeah.
I don't know if I can ever be prepared for the summoning, but we'll see whence comes the summoning and what comes from the summoning.
We're pretending like this didn't already happen.
Hey, how you doing, Josh?
I'm doing pretty good.
So this is your second live gig. How you doing? All right?
Yeah, no, it's been a while.
Yeah, it has. So for those, what we did was just a little bit different. And so now we're going to do normally what we do on the show, which is a bit of a current events and try to have fun with it. But, you know, with the news being news, sometimes fun is difficult. Yeah. So, recent polls have determined that the percentage of Americans who believe in a god ranges from 64 to 87%, depending on how survey questions are phrased. Gallup found that 87% responded affirmatively to the outright question, "Do you believe in God?" But belief drops to 8 percentage points when respondents are asked to choose from the three options of believing in God, being unsure, or firmly not believing in God. The number drops even further to 64% when survey participants reply that they are convinced God exists. The results suggest that between 13 and 36% of Americans may hold, pragmatically speaking, atheist or agnostic worldviews. The results come from Gallup's Values and Beliefs poll, and this is the most D&D poll I think I have ever read. I am waiting to roll for Thacko. All the numbers. Oh, jeez. It's just like, oh, yeah, so it's this number, but unless Mercury's doing a thing, then it's this number. We don't know. It's so weird and complex and
well, I think what it really draws attention to is people are really conflicted, one, about what their beliefs are or how they respond to things. Because when you're looking at being an atheist, it's like, no God? No, I don't have a belief in God. But if someone asks you, do you believe in God? No. But if you ask, are you sure that God exists? Nah. And it's like those two things. People, I feel like it's speaking to the social pressure to say, yes, I believe in God, rather than are you firmly convinced in that? And when people are like, no, I'm not really convinced, and that number is like greater than the people who are like, no, I do not believe in God. It's like, are we as atheists recognizing that sometimes saying, I'm not really convinced, is a more palatable question to admit affirmatively to than rejecting a belief in God?
What I'm seeing from this is that, I mean, we learned, first of all, from 2016 that polls are not that great. I mean, we're still living on that premise right now. But also, like, I mean, polls can be manipulated to reflect whatever the person taking the poll wants to actually present. So when you're doing a poll, you have to show your work, and you have to be extremely careful about how you're actually developing your questions, because how you develop your questions determines the answers.
Well, I'll make a cruddy D&D joke for the purposes of humor, but like, I actually, there's a lot to like about a study like this, where it gets into the multi-valued approach that religion has in the United States, where you know, where it can be so much of a part of people's identities in believing or not believing, and the fact that you can have, you know, stages of or different durations of not believing, like between me and my dad when I finally told him I was an atheist, and the first thing he ever said to me about religion was like, he got super mad and refused to make me pancakes and was like, how do you know? No pancakes for you.
But also, yeah. The thing is a lot of people are knee-jerk Christians. Like, they'll immediately think of themselves as a Christian, even though they've never thought about it until you pose that question to them.
Well, it's part of the sort of the Christian American social substrate.
Right. They've been told day after day, hey, you're a Christian. This is a Christian nation. This is the blah, blah, blah. But, you know, a lot of people don't actually really put more thought in it beyond that. They don't really know what Christians mean by being a Christian or being born again or...
Yeah, no, I actually really prefer this study over the usual Pew Research study on religion, because it does show you just like the nomenclature is so important, and so it's a really great example of how poll design is really key, and you can engineer polls just by the way you question things. Yeah. And that's how you get things like push polling and negative polling and all that stuff.
Well, I mean, Temple Foundation is infamous for these kind of polls.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then anything that's PragerU.
Oh, I'm moving on. Yeah. Okay. We have an email. This is Lucy from the internet, who writes, I'm an atheist who wants R&D done to determine the most effective strategies against those that only backfire to reinforce a Christian's faith. The ridiculous deserve the best or most effective arguments we have to offer, and without R&D, we have no idea what that is.
This is a really cool kind of concept of saying, hey, you know what? Maybe I'm an atheist and I see someone who has beliefs that are irrational, and so I'm just telling them why their belief is clearly irrational, but it's really backfiring, and that person I'm arguing against is just digging in. And so when you're looking at being a science-minded person, hey, why don't we actually do some research into what is actually effective in getting someone to question their belief and question digging into their faith? Even when facts say otherwise or suggest that your belief is as Lucy is saying, ridiculous.
Yeah, so I like the Socratic method. I think you don't have to do a whole lot of R&D into it. Basically, it's just about asking questions and not being confrontational and forcing your answer upon the person that you're asking the question. So that seems to be the more effective one, to not engage somebody's... hypothalamus, or am I getting that right? Or just like the lizard brain.
Dad. Is hypothalamus.
I'm not a neurosurgeon.
Yeah.
Amygdala.
Amygdala. There we go.
Yeah, the almond one. Yeah. Okay.
I'm not a Star Wars character.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a co-pilot with Infundibulum. R&D is a little bit weird on this one, because, chances are, if you're. Just the way this question is phrased, it's an adversarial question, and I think it suggests an adversarial nature here. And when you're already, if you're trying to convince someone of something, which is not something I generally do, that's not my game. But if you're positioning yourself adversarially to the point where you have to do R&D or reconnaissance in order to figure out what's going on, you're probably already in backfiring territory, because it's going to seem kind of insulting. And if you're being insulted, I don't think you're going to listen that well.
I think what this also brings up is drawing attention to that backfire effect, where sometimes Socratic questioning, or sometimes even before you're wanting to convince someone that's really digging into their faith, you look at someone and you challenge even Socratically what they're believing, and that effect has that counterintuitive outcome. And there are starting to be different kinds of studies that look at what are things that open people's minds. So we've talked about being a scientific-minded person that's pro-vaccination, because we know the science behind how vaccines work. And looking at parents that are anti-vaxxers, that we would classify as anti-vaxxers, and then saying what are those things that don't make parents dig in further, it's speaking to what their concern is and that they want the best for their child. It's saying, wow, you're a really good intentional parent that clearly cares about your child's well-being. And speaking to that creates that bridge and creates that in. So that's just one of the kinds of areas that are beginning to be studied in things that aren't just about like adversarial beliefs, but have real world consequences and real world outcomes.
This actually, now that I have returned from the mountain, and I recently discovered that a lot of our fans think the mountain is metaphorical. No, it's Mount Rainier. It's a real mountain. It's like a decade volcano. You know, it's a thing. I've been having an argument with myself where, like, the unstated position in this is that we need to convert people, or we need to not reinforce the faith of a Christian. That's never been a thing that I want to do. Like, for me, this show has always been not, you should be an atheist. It's, hey, we're out here, you know, we're a part of the American tapestry, and we'd like to be able to say things without being told we're literally garbage people. And that's what it's been about for me, to the point where one of the subjects I'm really thinking about addressing in the next year, which is our 10th year, we have this debate thing, this debate, almost a fetish in the atheism community, in the humanism community. And I've been invited to debates, I've gone to debates, I've been a part of them, and I'm coming to the conclusion that I don't think they do anything other than make people angry at each other. Where, like, this is does this actually help? Does this serve? Like, I could go in front of a bunch of people at TCC and say, yeah, this is what an atheist believes, and now I'm going to listen to the guy who wants to throw rocks at gay people for 10 minutes. Or I can do something like camp, where I don't. It's not about convincing people. It's about it's about helping a human self-actualize. And I'm beginning to wonder, what are the ends of debate? What is the purpose of debate? It's like, even in the American context, like, we value politicians because they're good at debate, which just seems like so much professional wrestling to me. What does debate have to do with policy? And so this is something that I'm thinking about addressing. On Ask an Atheist in the next year, and I'm saying it in front of a crowd to sort of guilt myself into actually doing it, because that's a thing I need to do these days. But so we're gonna go into a break, and when we come back, I am going to summon the Werebecky. This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic, 844-753-7842. I go to the break. When we come back, we're gonna try and invent a camp right here in this room. On a warm Thursday in 2012, the inaugural Camp Quest Northwest runs headlong into its final stretch. You are a junior staff member standing on Samish Island, and Jack Island off to the west is a vision of fire in the summer sunset. The starchy remains of Smiley Fries lingers on your palate. The fatigue of chasing after campers gives you cause to rebel against the very concept of gravity. But you now know that this camp has been an unqualified success. The face of free thought in the Pacific Northwest has undergone a tectonic shift in this week, and it will never be the same. Staring off into that sunset, arms akimbo, is a counselor at home in his element. He may seem like just another counselor, but he is the director. He is the legendary man driven by unseen forces, as he is the keeper of that holy of holies, that thing which the impromptu culture emerges, that thing which junior staff will know but never truly understand. He is driven by the schedule. He is Chuck, and the schedule drives him now. An internal decision is made. His eyes shift. There is a sharp intake of breath, and then...
All set? You bet!
The evening ritual begins, and attention passes from Chuck to the center of the gathering, where the timber is alight and the time to commune in story and song arrives. A small, unassuming person rises from the bench. She breathes in and wood smoke curls into her nostrils, providing a nosmic bass note to the ensemble of bug spray, salt air, and late evening adolescent perspiration. Becky, Baroness of Pedagogy, Slayer of Homesickness, Solver of Problems, undergoes a change. Her pupils dilate, her tones shift as she becomes Rebecca Friedman of Gallup. Leader of the flame. Go ahead.
This is a repeat after me song.
This is a repeat after me song.
And a do as I do song.
And a do as I do song.
We need one hand.
We need one hand.
on your head.
On your head.
And the other hand.
And the other hand.
Also on your head.
Also on your head.
Because.
Because.
The moose, the moose.
The moose, the moose.
Swimming in the water.
Swimming in the water.
Eating his supper.
Eating his supper.
Where did he go?
Where did he go?
He went to sleep.
He went to sleep.
He went to sleep.
He went to sleep.
He went.
He went
to sleep.
Sleep.
So that's how camp went. How'd camp go for you guys? This is, again, this is Ask an Atheist. Me, Sam Aldi, 844 Skeptic. 844-753-7842. We should probably get the lights because I'm going to trip over something and potentially hurt myself. Potentially. Come on. This is me. I would hurt myself. Absolutely. That's not a question. Go ahead and have a seat, Becky. So joining us... Oh, I should probably make the campfire go away because that could get pretty distracting pretty quick. Okay. Yeah, so joining us right now, we are... Well, I should... Well, okay. I'm doing this out of order, so I'm a little confused. But we are still at the Camp Quest National Summit here in Renton, Washington. How are you guys? How are you doing today? And Becky, why don't as leader of the flame, why don't you introduce our guest?
It's a little bit of passing the flame over right now that I want to welcome Kim, our executive director of Camp Quest National. Hey there. And we, as happy and as thrilled as we are to show off some of the awesome talents and things of Camp Quest Northwest, we're also here looking at the talents and awesome things of all of our camps. And so, Kim, I'm hoping that you can kind of take our listeners through that a little bit. And I want to start off just with saying, like, how did you make your way to being executive director of Camp Quest?
Well, that is a wonderful question, Becky. And I think, were you asking me to talk speak to about the experience here of the summit too?
Sure, of the summit too, yeah. Yeah.
Well, so for myself, I started with Camp Quest as the national executive director in my first experience of coming to this organization, because that's how I found out about it. I was previously a camp director running Shakespeare camp, and if you didn't think that was nerdy enough, try Camp Quest. So... I had finished graduate school and I had always loved camp. It'd always been a big part of my life, and I was a camper, and I was looking for that camp where I could find my family, my chosen family. And I also wanted to find an organization where if I decided, all right, if I'm going to do this work, this hard, hard work of working in nonprofits and really wanting to live my values through working with an nonprofit organization helping kids, I wanted to find one that was aligned with what I believed. And when I stumbled upon Camp Quest on, I don't know, some random Google search, I was like, oh, this just might be the place. And what I found after being welcomed with more than open arms, but open minds and open hearts, was that this is really a community that people come to because it is that family. It is that other family that we get at least for a week. And for some of us, we're lucky enough to work together the rest of the year. But I think that's a big part of what makes Camp Quest Camp Quest, is that it's the place where we all come to feel included. And so that's why I'm here. And I think why a lot of the people in this room are here and why we've come together this weekend. And we are 80 people strong this weekend here.
Nice.
At the Camp Quest Summit. And so, yeah, and we're having a great time.
Can you talk a little bit about what the rest of that year working together kind of looks like from a perspective of something that's not just a single week out of the year, which is what it might look like from the perspective of a camper or a parent who sends their child to be entrusted in our care for 1 week out of the year? What does it look like the rest of the year?
Well, if you're running Camp Quest, and there are more people in this room and who are gonna talk later about that specific experience, but
oh, yes.
What it means, but you know, camp is an all year round endeavor, and it is an all year round intensive endeavor, and it starts sometimes even 2 years before that summer you send your child to camp. The camp team is thinking and planning about what the camp theme is going to be, what activities they're going to need to plan for. They're doing policy reviews to make sure that camp is going to be safe and fun and inclusive and gets better every year. So that's an all year round process. And for the national organization where I'm at, you know, I'm here to help support that effort and to be your support and cheerleader team all year round. That's how I view my role. So if a camp leader is having a challenge or needs some support, you know, that's why I keep my camp cell phone on me all the time. Even though I hope it doesn't ring too often. And I think that's the case for most camp directors or former camp directors in my case. So, yeah.
So there are Camps Quest all over North America and, you know, from the Southwest to the Northwest and, you know, middle of the country.
Oh, yeah. The Attorney's General rule applies. Yeah.
The Camps Quest, yeah. Right? The Camps Quest. So, as an executive director, one of those real fun things is you get to visit those different campsites while they're in session, right?
I do, and it's really fun.
So what are some of the common threads that you see from camp to camp?
Oh, gosh. Well, one thing I should say, you know, so each Camp Quest is totally unique and different. They're all hosted at different campsites, and those sites are different, and the people who are running them are different, and the themes are different, and the activities are different, and that's also part of the fun of what makes us such a unique organization. It's kind of our superpower. And also, when you walk into a Camp Quest, you're like, oh, I'm home again. Even if you haven't been to that Camp Quest before, and I don't know that I have the words for saying what makes that magic happen, except that all the people who are involved because it means something to them.
There was a phrase I heard at camp this week that I think really underscores the thing I most want to do, or the thing I love doing the most at camp, which is being the authority that teaches people to question authority.
That...
Where... you might have noticed from, I don't know, 10 years of being a talk radio host, that I'm a kind of a snarky jerk. through Camp Quest, I always thought I was like bad at, I've never done camps before. Like mm-hmm. Becky has, where Becky developed over generations, like, where for me, camp, I've never really done camp except for that one time I was kidnapped by Baptists, but that's a different story. But to find out that there is literally a place where all of the skills that I've developed over time, are useful, and it just happens to be a kids' camp, and I'm someone who thought I was just bad for kids.
Well,
and then suddenly,
you know what? You haven't met our campers yet,
right?
And they know that you belong at camp too.
Yeah,
and so you know, you mentioned the critical thinking and questioning authority, and that is a huge essential part of what Camp Quest is about. I love it. Someone else said it better this weekend. We don't try and teach kids what to think, but we try to encourage them to think, to use their minds, to use the reason that they have when they're out there exploring and questioning the world, whether it's digging into the sandy beaches of Samish Island and digging up crabs and asking questions, or whether it's sitting in a campfire circle and asking questions about their identity. That that deep level of questioning is an essential part of the Camp Quest DNA.
I would think so, yeah.
And it comes out and blossoms in every part of the camp programming and in every part of the programming that you don't see the rest of the year, in the relationships between the volunteers and in the decisions that get made. Each tiny little decision, and there are millions of them, that all add up to Camp Quest as your kid comes to experience it and takes it away with them after a week.
So we know that there are some things that unite each of the Camp Quest sites.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you can talk, having that perspective of seeing so many, what are the nuances in the way those essential little threads get enacted and adopted at all the different places and maybe within different years?
That's such a big, broad question. But I would say, like, we have core program values that were, you know, all the camp activities, you know, at some point they're going to focus on science. They're going to focus on critical thinking, on humanist ethics. That means being good for goodness sake, right? Being good humans to one another and learning what that means and learning a humanist ethical viewpoint, acknowledging our free thought heritage and enjoying and loving the outdoors and recognizing our place in the broader ecosystem, you know, not just me, the camper, and my experience here in the woods this week, but also my place as part of the human species, right? So it's about celebrating and coming and the human experience, and the way that manifests at different camps, you know, is going to be, you know, in different science activities, in different discussion circles, you know, and I'm going to let the camp leaders tell you more of the specifics of what that really looks like, but that's kind of how the threads come together.
One of the discussions that's been interesting to me here at the summit has been the interface between what we do as Camp Quest with you know, with free thought, with developing critical thinking skills and all the itinerant things that go with it. But also developing leadership skills. And that's something that I found myself being pushed towards even before we started talking about it at the summit, where you say question authority, but people think, you know, robot James Dean, all authority is bad. No, it's to question authority is to listen to, like, is to hear what's being said by authority and go, is that good? Is that bad? Is making your own analysis of the information you are receiving from authority, from your senses, from those things. And those are core concepts of Camp Quest. And I also find them to be core concepts of leadership.
Yes.
Full stop.
Yes. You know? This. I'm like jumping up and down in my seat because, you know, there one of our camp leaders, Sean, led a great discussion session this weekend about, you know, what youth being a youth leadership development organization means. And it means creating opportunities for our campers to learn what leadership means in the context of working with other people. And it's so interesting that, you know, a big part of what we're about is questioning authority, and yet we also want to teach campers how to be responsible authority figures. And so, I think one of the ways that we do that is many of our camps, I think probably at this point, all of our camp programs have what we call a counselor in training or leadership track program, where the older campers have very intentional discussions amongst each other and opportunities to show their leadership at camp and to practice those leadership skills. So questioning authority is a big part of Camp Quest, and also learning how to be a leader and to model good leadership is also part of that learning experience for the campers and for us.
Yeah, that was a pretty good takeaway from the summit this year for me.
Yeah.
So now I think we should probably start talking about the individual camps. But to give you an idea, I'm gonna take a page from camp and model the behavior I'd like you to do. So I have this thing here. So we have a bunch of representatives from a bunch of camps. I'd like you to tell me what your camp is, where they can find it online, because while we are a radio show, most of our listeners listen to us online. And a couple things that were really cool this year. Just something that not necessarily something that was like personally for the camp, for the organization. It could just be anything. But just give us a sense of what camp was like for you this year. Like, for example...
And this is the... Hello? Okay, yeah, all right.
This is the closest I get to prop comedy. My name's Sam. I'm from Camp Quest Northwest. You can find us at campquestnorthwest.org. And for me, this year, I demoed some stuff I made basically out of garbage. This is my HF antenna. I did a radio... Well, okay, little secret. I'm addicted to radio. It's a full-on addiction. But, like, not just production, but the theory, the science, everything behind it. I've been a ham radio guy since I was 12, and I wanted to share it with the campers, and this was the first year I get to do it. And I started with, hi, my name's Sam. I build antennas out of garbage. For example, this antenna is made out of a crappy fishing pole, which is an adjective and a adjective. and guitar repair parts, basically, to wit... Hello. Okay, there we go. So it's a fiberglass fishing pole covered in copper tape. And this was a proof of concept because I can carry it with me. It corroded a little, as you can probably tell. But I did talk to four continents with this at camp. We listened to an atomic clock. I had a wonderful conversation with an older gentleman in New Zealand. And then the other antenna, I literally built it out of stuff I picked out of the garbage, and we listened to weather satellites and got weather imagery at camp. And that was, it was a demo. I tend to like things a little bit more hands-on, but this was the start of what I hope is going to be a multi, sort of an ongoing project for me, which is doing more radio stuff at camp. So who'd like to go next?
Or do we have to call on somebody? Because that's sometimes a thing you have to do.
Andy! Well, hello. I'm Andy. I'm from Camp Quest North. We have camps in Minnesota and, not Ohio. Iowa. Woof. Been a long weekend. You can find more information in the correct locations at campquestnorth.org. But one of the things we had that was pretty exciting this year, our theme was music and living in harmony. And we actually did a fundraiser where we got to purchase a whole fleet of ukuleles for camp to have this year and all of our next years and the next and the next. And that was a really fun thing to do. And we also had what we came to call the Instrument Petting Zoo, where we did a whole activity on instruments you won't find in the band room. And the kids got to try all of the like craziest, wackiest, coolest like instruments we could bring in for them to actually hands-on play with and have weird jam sessions. And it was really fun. And I would love to speak more, but I was in the kitchen this year, and I don't know if I saw camp if it wasn't right outside my little window. So. Yeah, check us out.
Thank you, Andy, from Camp Quest North that takes place in Iowa and Minnesota. Hey, Tucker, want to tell us about Camp Quest West?
I sure do, Becky. So my name is Tucker Claypool. I am the LT director and director of operations for Camp Quest West. We serve the California, Hawaii, Arizona, probably some other state. The moon is technically in our contract. We pushed for that real hard because somebody wanted Oregon. I'm looking at Northwest over here. So we are the, I believe we're the largest Camp Quest organization. We have two locations. One of those locations does a back-to-back week and then another week session. So the NorCal location is about 2 hours north of Sacramento. We do one full week. This year it's going to be in the June 28th to July 4th. We cap it off with a little July 4th celebration, and then we roll into another week, and some poor bastards do both weeks, so good job there. And then we have our SoCal location, which has about double the number of kids, but it's only 1 week. It's about an hour outside of Los Angeles. And so as you can imagine, serving about 200, 250 kids, depending on if we hit our recruitment goals, is challenging. We're fully volunteer, except for one administrative assistant who we just simply have to like email people and keep them on track because it's such a challenge, is a lot. So we have some really amazing stuff coming up for 2020 that I'm personally incredibly excited about. The craziest thing that happened last year, which is leading into 2020 as we do our policy review, how can we run a better camp, take feedback, is a number of years ago, we decided to adopt a gender inclusivity policy. We had a number of campers who expressed that they weren't comfortable being placed in a girl's cabin or a boy's cabin. And we took that to heart and looked at our values and said, you're right, we need a space to make everyone feel included. And what we did in that process was look at the literature, look what other camps were doing, and adopt that. And this year we realized that we didn't do it appropriately. We had a gap in our policy. We didn't know how to address a particular issue. As I mentioned, I run our LT program. So this is our leadership track. These are our high school kids that we're trying to prepare for college and the world beyond and how to be a good community. So we had done an activity with them that was about just a conversation about justice and what is the difference between justice and revenge. And they're high schoolers, and they pay attention to politics, and they pay attention to the news, and so justice is bad. Justice is corruptible. Justice can be changed and intervened, but revenge is pure. So these high schoolers were all in favor of revenge. That was my reaction as well, but I held it back.
And then Fury Road starts.
I guided the conversation. So we ran into this policy gap, and I thought, aha, learning moment. LTs. We have a policy gap in our gender inclusivity program. We want to make sure that this staff member, who we're not quite sure how to let them shower without like offending parents who didn't sign up for this option. What do we do, LTs? How do we solve this problem and balance our requirements for a inclusive, open space where everyone gets to be themselves versus parents didn't sign up to have their kid shower and be exposed to something that they didn't opt into, which is how our policy works. So our LTs wanted to see our written policy. So we printed them a copy, and they tore it apart. They were so 16-year-olds, they're involved in this conversation about gender inclusivity. They live the conversation of gender inclusivity. So I told them, great, write us a new policy. And they said, no problem. So I expect that to be coming sometime around December. I'm very excited to see what they come out with. And we're going to put it to the board and let the board provide feedback and vote on it. And then ideally in 2020, we don't have the problem we did in 2019.
Very nice.
David, do you feel comfortable speaking about your camp?
I am from Camp Quest, Kansas City, here with two other members from the barbecue-drenched plains of Kansas.
Hey.
We meet at a fairly small site. We only have one session so far, but we meet at a small site deep in the woods, kind of on the southwestern corner of the state, where we share our campground with the world's friendliest snapping turtle, I would have to say, and an amazing assortment of spiders who are just incredibly fond of our campers and of our personal spaces.
I'm feeling an intramural argument going on between Kansas and Northwest because spiders aren't an arthropod, they're a season. Here.
Well, we are definitely in that season come time for camp.
Cool.
But yeah, relatively small. We haven't been in operation very long, but it's a strong community, still growing, and with a lot of repeat campers.
Fantastic.
Thank you. Ben, would you like to tell us about Chesapeake?
Ben, you were all over. We need a camp podcast. And here, have a microphone. Oh,
just not with me on it. That's
okay.
All.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm Ben. I'm from Camp Quest Chesapeake. You can find us at campquestchesapeake.org, I believe. We're a few hours south of D.C. We are the best Camp Quest.
I might have to turn the heater on the fireplace. It just got cold in here.
I feel like we're not the coolest by any means. We're pretty hot. But
dripping.
Dripping
in the Virginia humidity.
I like to tell people that, you know, it's an experience coming to our camp, and you know, we survive camp and we're all better and closer for it. But no, it's a great camp. We have a lot of fun activities. We do things like Goodwill Fashion Show, which we base off whatever theme it is that year. So the last one, we did a Seven Seas theme this past summer, and so we had different pirate and sea monster themed outfits for our Goodwill Fashion Show. We do a dance every year, which is probably one of my favorite activities, certainly the most fun. I think the coolest thing, though, this past summer was seeing all of the former campers become counselors. We had quite a handful, and it was really cool to see them grow up over the past years and now be our colleagues.
I hear you there. The very first camper I made a connection with at Camp Quest Northwest, the very first year, 2012, he's on that recording as like an 8-year-old. This was his last year as an LT, and he's a counselor next year, and we're already working on programming. And this is a thing that I have never experienced before. This is a unique experience in my life, and it's pretty amazing.
Well, we got to get used to it, because yeah, there's just going to be more graduating.
That's a sign of the health of the organization, is like old, you know.
Exactly. And they're going to be future counselors, and that means we get to open more campsites and have more campers and have more camp fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you totally can't be a radio ghost. That, no.
Yeah, yeah, can't you tell? This is really horrible.
Sharon, Goodwill Fashion Show. Like, that's super in our wheelhouse. Yeah.
Giving us ideas.
Just go to the Goodwill outlet. Get it by the pound.
Yeah. I bought that at Goodwill on Thursday.
One man's
Paul
junk
had one.
Is another
I decided
man's
I liked
treasure.
Them.
So we've heard from West and from Mid-Atlantic with Chesapeake and from Kansas City. Is there anyone here from Smoky Mountains and Texas? And we have heard from North. How about Ohio or Michigan? I'll make Sebastian talk about Ohio, because Sebastian had one of those amazing sort of experiences being counselor at multiple places, starting out in Ohio and then bouncing to another place too.
Yeah, we stole Sebastian, I think. Yeah.
Yes, I've been involved with Camp Quest for the past 3 years now. This year I did move to Seattle, so I had the opportunity to be back at both Ohio's July session and also at Camp Quest Northwest's August session for the first time ever. It was a phenomenal experience at both camps. I love them both very dearly. Even though I live out here now, I'm still going to continue going back to Ohio every year. You can find us at ohio.campquest.org. I wasn't really sure which specific anecdote to bring up from Camp at Ohio this year, because we did a lot. Being involved the past 3 years, I think one of the most amazing things about it is the relationships I've been able to have with the campers themselves, and seeing them grow up year after year and become more involved with camp, LTs and all that. And one of the more secretive to campers traditions we have in Ohio is the LTs that are aging up out of the LT program, we allow to stay up late, kind of on the last day, hang out with the staff and eat snacks and all that. And seeing some of those LTs do that was a really meaningful experience. Also,
We definitely don't have as big of a spider problem or anything like that in Ohio as we do out here, as no one told me about, by the way.
No, I have snake, though.
But that's what I was going for. Yeah. We did have a giant snake just sitting right in front of our cabin door as we were all coming back from an activity. And one of my campers almost stepped directly on the snake trying to enter the cabin. And we all had to be like, whoa, back up, until we could get someone out there to get the snake to go back into the forest. And that was a fun
free,
experience.
Yeah.
Also, no one told me about spider season until I moved out here.
Yeah.
And I just want to say shame on all of you.
Yeah. So that mountain that I've been staying on, no one told me it was a volcano. I feel you. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Well, thank you, Sebastian. I think we want to also hear from Jennifer, who also comes to us from Kansas City, and she's got some other kinds of highlights and things that are unique to her perspective and her experience as a camp counselor.
Yeah, I'm actually, I'm this will be my fourth year as camp director, so it was kind of a whirlwind. I kind of came into it mid-planning my first year, so this will be nice. This will be my third year, like, actually starting out as camp director and getting to go the whole way through. And
I don't know if
so much.
If it came through, but I find the concept of a camp director a little bit intimidating.
Yeah, it's a lot. I don't know. I actually think programming director is harder, because I did serve as programming director. I think that's a much harder job to do. And we have a fantastic programming director who does it better than I think I did. She's fantastic. But yeah, I think some of the cool things about our camp is we had to, for a few years, we had a facility that we didn't have anything but a pool. So we had to come up with all of our programming, and I think the programming that we do at our camp is just, I am so excited about it every year. This year, our theme was based off a book series about a magic school. It was the Sorcery
Wizard
of Science. And so we did all kinds of themes around magic and science, and everything from the philosophy of, like, is it okay to have a house elf, or, you know, things like that. One of the most fun things we had this year was we did a Quidditch tournament, and they did an exhibition match with the senior leadership and the LT campers, which was a huge hit. And the senior leaders won. Thank you very much. But yeah, that was a great part of our season. Now we're going to do Quidditch every year because it's a lot of fun. And we have one of our favorite things is we had a chef that came in, and we do Iron Chef Nate, and they get to do a different cuisine challenge every year. So this is one of our favorite, like, Kansas City signature program. And this year they had to come up with, they had to whip cream by hand. And one of our teams came up with and they could add stuff to it. One of the camper groups came up with a lemon whipped cream that was out of this world. And we got that recipe. So.
Nice.
But yeah.
Is that one of those things, like, It's programming, but it also doubles as a way to burn off excess energy if things are going pretty...
Yes, definitely.
Nice.
Well, we did one year where they actually made their own, as we talked about barbecue, they made their own barbecue sauce, and they learned they learned about sweet and savory flavors and spicy flavors, and we had some quality barbecue sauces, and we actually ended up, our last day of camp, doing a barbecue, and we used the two winning barbecue sauces to put on the chicken, and of course that was something that the campers could go home and brag about. So,
Amazing. I think we often hear from a lot of Northwest voices, but maybe to cap this off, we'll hear from Chuck from Camp Quest Northwest.
Thank you. So we had two sessions this year. I had a great time doing the first session. I got to do the teen session as a teen counselor with the LTs. We had a bunch of them. I had so much fun teaching them how to solve a Rubik's Cube. They actually did it, and they were going crazy with it by the end of the week, driving everybody nuts with it. And I think, where's E-Man? He's okay, he's continued on with it, and he's obsessively solving the Rubik's Cube 10 times a minute now. Yeah, he keeps buying them. I think he has a problem.
He'll show up at post shows with, like, Sam, yeah. I need a Rubik's Cube yeah. that glows in a specific... Sam, this means something.
He's messaging me, asking me about, like, what about this technique? I'm like, I don't know. I just know how to solve it.
It's
That's
super
it.
Cool.
But I had a great time. It was a lot of fun. I was director for the second session. And I think my best memory from that one was we were building... spaghetti towers, and I watched the Kim, the executive director. you know what I'm saying? You know where I'm going here. And Lisa, and who else was there around the table with you?
Yes,
that's right, Colby and Amber, our counselors, and they were. I think spit was involved. Like lots of spit was involved. Like no one was spitting at each other, but they're trying to like. Stick stuff together.
When
and
you
it was
are
getting...
trying to build a tower out of spaghetti and dry clay and duct tape, what else?
And the
is
clay
at
was
your
drying on you, right?
Yeah. What else is at your disposal? Sometimes it just takes a little spit, Chuck.
So. But this is a tribute to your versatility. Like you come to camp.
Well, thank you.
And you can't be averse to spit, dirt. Bees, spiders,
snakes. Yeah. Snapping snakes, turtles, worm poop, you never know. Yeah.
Worm poop, you know.
Porcupines. Exactly. Well, I felt that it was important for us as a leadership team to go through the experience that we were asking of the campers, right? And so, and I think we had a bonding experience out of that.
I thought one of you was going to have an aneurysm. You were laughing so much.
I might have snorted.
It was
a few
joyful
times.
Just watching you. Great.
We had a blast. We really had a blast.
Love to see that. I think Sam, you're wearing your bridge.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. We were talking about it. So normally at Camp Quest Northwest, we do I think a lot of camps do this. They do a popsicle stick bridge. And then one day I decided that I would use polymer materials instead of trying to actually build a bridge. So instead of building a bridge out of sticks and using glue to hold the sticks together, I just tossed some sticks onto a cookie sheet and dumped glue over it and waited for it to dry. No stick was touching another. And
this is the kind of ingenuity that we foster at Camp Quest.
Yeah.
Thinking outside of the box.
It took about 900 years to dry. And it held. I mean, it has a lot of tensile strength. But one thing I didn't think about is that it's kind of floppy. And so, I mean, couldn't hold things. Yeah, but under tension, and tension is not a part of the experiment. So it held maybe a Fruit Loop, and then just done.
Right. Well, that was the whole thing with the spaghetti towers that Mike Warbington, who is the program director for Camp Quest Northwest, he's not here because he's getting ready to go to the MLS Sounders game tomorrow.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And but the challenge was you have to build this tower and it has to survive an earthquake, you know? So, you know. It has to be also the tallest tower too. So you know we throw a lot of these challenges at the campers and at the staff, and you know.
So we talk about Camp Quest Northwest a lot on the show because I live in Tacoma. I'm very much a person of Tacoma, but and you email us about it, but they're everywhere, and there's just these magical things. I'm learning. Oh, wait, there's a place I can go where there's Camp Quest and barbecue. I have to rethink my life. there's so much stuff going on. So I encourage you guys to go to campquest.org and check it out.
Please come check it out. You can, campquest.org, and you can read about our programming and our philosophy, and reach out to us if you're interested in volunteering. We are recruiting all year round, and we would love to have you at camp, even if you've never been to camp before. We get plenty of volunteers who are like, this is my first time at camp, and I'm in my, you know, early 40s. That's definitely happened, and so you can volunteer. You can get information about signing up your children. And we're also really about accessibility at Camp Quest. We really want to make this an accessible experience for as many people as who want to attend. And so we also offer camperships, and
and financial assistance to make it accessible and doable for your family. So, so yeah, I just wanted to make sure we got that in there.
Okay. Well, that's all the time we've got for this episode. Our website is atheist.radio. Our phone number is 844-753-7842. Our Twitter is AskAnAtheistWA. I packed my HF gear up for the year, so you're not going to see me there anymore. Yeah, I'm actually using Twitter now. I'm talking about chocolate and beer. See you guys next week. And it's just such a fun job because I get to be really experimental. And so we're going to try and do a little bit of that today because there's something Becky has been... I have been incommunicado for the last 5 months. I have been... Well, you guys know Paul. I've been staying with Paul as sort of a mental vacation, stuff like that. And I haven't been hosting on the show. This is my official return is this episode.
Wow.
And so I'm kind of getting back in the mood of it, get back in the swing of it. And I want to show, Becky's been hosting, and I want to show my listeners a side of Becky that they haven't seen before. Because Becky is a teacher. Becky is we have very different styles when it comes to the show. She's very erudite, stentorian perhaps. and I'm this. I mean, we're very different, you know. And but Becky is different at camp, and if you've been to camp with Becky, you know what I'm talking about. And I want to create that for my listeners. And so we're going to start with the second segment, and we're going to start with Becky. Becky, would you grab that microphone, please? So we're going to try and create. I'm going to try and bring out the where Becky.
Uh oh.
The first, where Becky. We need a campfire.
Oh. Wonderful. Look at that.
Second.
That's what that thing was. Like, there's a TV under there.
Second, a deep cut all the way from 2012, I bring you campfire noises.
Here's your good...